Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Off the ball. Rugby.
What Jory Barrett has brought to the club, the performances he's had, the punch that he gives is another dimension on what Robbie's game is. That's the reality.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Delighted to say Tim Clancy joins us, the former Cork City manager. Tim, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, man. How are we? All good?
We talked to you recently enough and I certainly didn't see your decision coming, but the fact that you announced it so quickly after the defeat to Derry suggests that it was in your head for a while. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think since I lost my assistant manager back in March, the international window, when Jamie went back to Scotland, and we struggled to get a replacement. I think the longer it went on without a replacement, my assistant manager and the person I had there that I could trust. And look, Liam Kearney stepped in and Cairns is doing an unbelievable job at City with the academy. And you look at the players that he's rolling off the conveyor belt there. And Greg Elverton in recent weeks came in, was brilliant. But again, that was a temporary situation because he's obviously got a job in UCC. So the longer it went without replacing the assistant manager, I think the harder it got.
What was it specifically about the assistant manager role that you felt you needed to be able to do your side of the job?
I just think, look, there's a real element of trust you need to have with your coaching staff. And when you have someone there that you can bounce ideas off, someone there you can rant to, you can let things off your own chest, they give you feedback and they can be honest as well with you. It probably relieves a bit of pressure. And someone that you work well with. And I know Jamie over 20 years. So when he left to go back to Scotland, it just felt like there was a big hole there, and the longer it went without replacing it, the more difficult it became.
And what was the difficulty in finding a replacement specifically that you could trust, and then also, I suppose, who was willing to take the terms on offer?
Well, that's the other side of it. I think when, we spoke to a good few people, some people from overseas, some people from within Ireland, some people from down in Cork as well, it was just difficult to get people to commit. I think, obviously, if you look at where we're at in the table, it's probably not as appealing to people to go in as maybe if they were fighting either end of the league table. And a couple we got close with, but fell through. And the more that happened, the more deflating it became.
Hiya, Tim. The timing of the announcement was fairly striking as well, because it was minutes after the Derry game. And Jers asked you there, you know, was it coming anyway? But was that result dependent? In other words, had you won the Derry game, do you think you'd actually still be in charge?
Possibly, but I think that was just kicking the can down the road. I think we needed more staff in the building. Definitely needed my assistant manager role sorted. There's other areas that made it a lot harder a task in regards to backroom staff as well. And I think the workload was probably getting on top of me. Things have changed a little bit in the last couple of months for myself personally at home.
Right.
And that probably played a big part of it as well. I was commuting quite a lot this season in particular. I was nearly commuting every day from Trim, which was 2 hours, 50 minutes. So I think it was probably a combination of a few things that sort of added to it.
Am I right in saying you've started your own business as well in Meath, is it?
Yeah, myself and my wife opened up our own gym. When I sort of got the ball rolling with that, it happened quite quickly overnight about 2 months ago. And there was a lot of work had to go into that in the last couple of months. Look, I've been involved in football for nearly 25 years since I left school. Playing wise, you know what it's like. You have a contract, it can last a long time, but as a manager, in the last 8-9 years, it's a precarious situation to be in where you win 3 games, you're the best in the world, and you lose 3 and you're looking for a job. So it's something that we have been looking at as a family to get more stability into our lives. And this project, when it came up, it didn't affect my working day-to-day job with Cork City, I don't think. But it's certainly something that's beneficial to the family.
So you signed a new deal, was it in September, for 2 years, wasn't it? So you had some sort of decent contract there, yeah. So, like, it's very understandable when you hear a situation that you started your own business, you're commuting every day, you're in charge of this Premier Division outfit, you have your own family as well. So I suppose something had to give, and you wanted that assistant manager to help out and you couldn't get it. Did the players get a sense that the end was near, do you think? This time last week, do you think the players knew that it was all about to be finished?
No, I don't think so. I think if you look at the performances from the players, like normally, look, if a manager loses the dressing room, as they say, or whatever else, performances dip and energy levels sort of reduce. But if you look at the second half against Derry, they were brilliant, and they have been. There's one thing I can't say a single thing about the players, because their application, although we haven't won a lot of games this season and we've lost quite a few, bar the Shamrock Rovers game, I think there was very little in a lot of the games they played. And there is the element of luck. I think if you look at the late goal against Sligo, where we could have won, and then the late goal against Drogheda, it probably leaves another 3 points off the table, and there was other games throughout the season that they possibly should have won or picked up points in as well. So I don't think the players seen that in coming. I think there was quite a bit of a shock over the weekend when I announced it. But look, I think it's a good idea now for someone else to go in. They've got a brilliant group of players there. They're getting Sean Maguire back fit, Greg Bulger's back on the pitch, Malik Drixdale would be very close now as well. And I think as soon as someone goes in and then players are fit, I think they'll be shooting up the table.
Well, you just listed the players returning. Gennaro Daniels, who you signed a few weeks ago, has been in good form recently. It's a promising squad, especially with the return to fitness from certain players. It must have been very tempting to try and stay and figure it out.
Yeah, like I honestly think that there's not much is needed for that club to be right at the other end of the table, where it's a club the size of Cork City need to be, to be honest. It's a difficult one to manage expectations, because the fans, rightly so, have expectations that they want to be challenged at the top of the table. And inside the club then as well, I think them expectations probably aren't as high. And me as the manager, I'm the sort of focal point that has to try and manage expectations of the club and also the fans. And there's probably a little disconnect, or maybe a little bit different opinions of where the club is now and where it wants to go. I think Dermot Usher is doing a job that's he's going to get the club to where it wants to be, but Dermot will do it in his own way, where he'd be successful. He's been a very successful man previously in his other business, and I think he'd be the same again in football. It's just that there's probably a little path to travel first before Cork City get to the top and challenging. But the fans obviously expect and want the team to be right up the top end of the table, and rightly so.
Do you think the ambition within the club needs to be greater?
I don't think the ambition needs to be greater, because I think the ambition's there. I just think that I'd say, like, if you looked at the demographics of the League of Ireland, where when Cork City last won the league, I think in 2017 with John, I'd say the budget was maybe a third of what's winning the league now. I think the finances to win the League of Ireland or compete at the very top have gone through the roof the last few years. And that comes off the back of attendances and PR and social media driven club activity and the FEI, in fairness, that we're now starting to build an industry slowly, but the finances go with that as well. So I think for City at the minute, where we're at, already we're at when I was there, we're probably looking to consolidate and build year on year.
Is there anything to prevent the club within to actually eventually get to where they want to go? You talked about Dermot Oshie. You think eventually he will get there. But are there stumbling blocks there at the moment that they need to remove in order for that to happen?
Look, from my point of view, I don't think there's anything there that's fundamentally wrong. I just think that for a manager, I think I wish I had more resources in regards to staff. I think the importance of having that level of staff around. I know Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers and Pats and Bows, a lot of them have a lot of day-to-day staff on the footballing side of things. We're probably short a little bit when I was there. And that adds to the workload and adds to the fatigue and everything else within the people that are being asked to lead the first team. So I think probably from my point of view, if I could have had something else, I probably would have had one or two more members of staff to give me a dig out that could have helped and probably made us a little bit more efficient.
And Tim, just for us on the outside, what would the duties have been for those people to actually relieve the burden on you? Is that down to planning sessions and also having time to do the one-on-one coaching with the individuals and also at the same time making sure that everything's okay in their home life, etc.? Like, what is the actual nuts and bolts of that?
I just think, like, look, there was one game where we didn't have an opposition analyst this year to go and watch teams play for us. Myself and Jamie Hamill jumped in the car after a training session in Cork at 1:30. We drove to Derry to watch Derry against Bowes because we were playing Bowes the following week. Watched the game. Obviously, the game kicked off at 7:45, whatever it was. We left the game and got back in at 4:00 a.m. Then we're back in for training at 9:30 the next day. So obviously, look, it has an effect. You got to get the work done. You have to do it. Small things like that. I think the huge role now, I think at all football clubs, is probably video analyst. There's a lot of hours that go into analysing games and preparing presentations for players and whatnot for the opposition. And especially with us who had a good turnover of new players into the league, that we had to try and do that to the best that we could. So that takes a lot of hours as well. And I think if you can relieve a lot of that, I know speaking to other managers in the league, they've said that that's probably the most important role at the club for the manager's point of view, is to have an analyst that can do and sort of maybe relieve a lot of workload for you in that regard. So I had Paul O'Donovan there, who's actually a brilliant analyst. But again, Paul's got a full-time job and he's dipping in now as much as he can to help. But it's probably a requirement that at the level that we're at now in the Premier Division, we need that little bit more that goes into the week-to-week running of it.
It's funny how precarious the whole thing is, because I can see if the club invests, and not let's not take Cork City, but any club, if a club spends the money in the backroom team but they were to get relegated because they haven't spent the money on the players, then you can't afford to have the backroom team. But if you don't put the money in the backroom team, then the players won't be able to perform and you might get relegated anyway. So it's kind of this vicious circle you can get trapped into.
Yeah, it is. And again, like, look, there is no real surprise stories in any league title. When someone wins the league, it's normally the majority of the time it's someone that has the biggest budget. I think that's why the Leicester City story was unbelievable maybe about 8 years ago, whenever they won the league, was because they didn't have the biggest budget. Same way that Kevin Doherty's doing an unbelievable job to have Drogheda up near the top of the table now. And that's why it's making headlines, is because everybody's looking at Drogheda and saying they shouldn't be up there. So I think, look, to be successful, you need to be able to compete with the teams that are at the top of the league, and that comes down to finances as well. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say that Dermot should have put more money in. It's Dermot's worked extremely hard in his life to be successful and earn money, and there's not really a return for people say it's investors. It's not investors. It's like a sugar daddy, because they don't get money back. You don't make money from the League of Ireland or most football clubs. So it's not just a matter of, right, look, knocking on the door and saying, right, put money in. It has to be some sort of hybrid, maybe, where you can sort of get money coming into the club as well as pushing about a little bit without jeopardising the future of the club as well.
Really what we're talking about here is the football pyramid and the industry. It's just missing a few bits at the minute. So while the story generally is that the league is on an upward bounce, there's still elements of it that have to bed in properly. For example, you've been involved in Irish football since you were a kid. You've kind of come through the system. You've played in England and Scotland. You've come back and you've managed. You've done your pro licence. There's a reasonable chance, I don't know exactly what your plans are, but there's a reasonable chance you might be lost to the game for a period of time now, or you'll go back in somewhere else. But it's not guaranteed. There's no network here. There's no LMA. There's nothing to kind of say, right, well, Tim, we actually want to download all the information you have, involve you at some level that's appropriate for you at the moment, and then when the time is right, get you back in. I don't know how to fix any of that.
I think, look, it does come down to funding. I think the biggest and the quickest way probably for clubs to make money over here is the sale of young players. I think St. Pat's have done every club in this country a huge favour by Gareth being resilient in offers that were made for Mason Media to say no, he wasn't happy with them, and he was able to knock them back, and eventually they've got £2 million up front for one of the most talented kids in this country. And I think that has to be the way forward. I think to develop more Mason Media's and Michael Noonan or young Victor that's at Rovers and Cathal O'Sullivan and the like, we need more funding into the academies. And I think the advantage we have of Brexit is now Mason Amelia would have been lost to England before he kicked the ball in the first team. Same with Cathal O'Sullivan and Michael Noonan, etc. So we have to capitalise now on the Brexit situation where we're holding on to the best kids until they're 18 and command proper, respectful transfer fees. But on the other side of that, we have to be right in what we're doing as well. And like the likes of Cathal O'Sullivan now, he's probably going to leave in the summer. The club mightn't get the transfer fee that they should get for him because his contract's up at the end of the season, which means that he's only 6 months away from the minimum compensation that the club would be due anyway. So from that point of view, I think Pats were ahead of the ball. I know they probably lost out on Adam Murphy and Sam Curtis a few years back, but they certainly didn't make the second mistake again with Mason, and they tied Mason down to a long-term deal, which allowed them to command a really good fee for him.
You may be gone, Tim, but I'd say you're going to be fairly invested about who gets the job next to Cork City. If the resources thing doesn't change for the better, and it doesn't sound like it's going to in the short or medium term, what kind of a manager do Cork City need? Like, is this to make life easier to someone who should be based in Cork? Does that help one factor so the travelling is down? What else? What kind of other criteria does the person need to have to take Cork City to the next level?
I think, like, look, I don't think like they've seen it. The staffing side of things as well. Like Dermot had given me a budget to get an assistant manager in, so it wasn't like that. There wasn't anything there. We got very close with a few. So obviously, a new manager is going to come in, possibly in a stronger position to say that I'm not going to come in unless I have X, Y, and Z. And then if the club agreed to that, they're already on a positive note. I think, look, there's a lot of talented young players at the club. It probably needs a little bit more experience in the squad, and I think there's already wheels in motion there for the summer window to make that happen. Dermot was very proactive in regards to recruitment and looking ahead to the next window, and we were planning at that stage to go and get maybe the 1, 2, 3 key players that possibly would have made us a hell of a lot stronger. And I've no doubt, again, with the players getting back fit, a new manager coming in, new ideas and a freshness, I suppose. And then the one or two additions that they will get in the summer, I think Cork City won't be far away from competing really well with a lot of teams in the league.
On your relationship with the players, was it simply a case of the final whistle went, excuse me, you shook hands with Tiernan Lynch, and you had decided then and there was going into the dressing room and telling the lads the decision?
I didn't tell the lads after the game. I'd spoken to someone at the club and just said, look, I think that's me done now. I was just exhausted. I really was, and there was no point me continuing on and doing a job at 50% as opposed to 100%. The club deserve a lot better than that. Right. Look, I had a contract, I had severance pay as well that I stepped away from. I haven't asked for a penny, and I don't want the penny as well. It was my decision completely to step away. And I think that the club deserve, as I said, that the manager, not that I wasn't fully in, I was 100% in, obviously, but the way I was feeling, I just felt that I don't think I was able to possibly be 100% myself. And even if there was a period of thinking about and going on longer, it possibly would have resulted in another couple of negative results, and I didn't want that for the club.
Were you burnt out?
Yeah, I did. I felt exhausted, and I said that to Dermot as well. I rang him and says, "Look, I just feel absolutely exhausted." Again, that's down to luck. The club had accommodation down there as well. But look, I don't want to be when I'm 2 hours or 2.5 hours in the car. I don't want to be away from my wife and kids. I find it hard to be putting my head down and sleeping somewhere else for a week when my kids are only 2.5 hours away. So that's a major part of it. I think if anyone knows me from around the league, my daughter Iona's with me practically every game I go to. So I'm very close to a lot of the, obviously I'm very close to my kids and that, and I want to spend as much time as possible with them. And I don't think it was affecting my job at Cork City, because as I said, we were absolutely plagued with injuries this season to really key players, and not just 4 or 5 key players, but they were all in the same position, the attacking end of the pitch. We had a plan for this season, how we wanted to play, and that got ripped up after game 3 or 4 when we'd lost Cahill, we'd lost Shawnee, we'd lost Malik, and then Keats was just after that as well. So it was a window closed, and tried to get the best out of the squad that we had left, and I thought that we were doing that to the best of our abilities, and the lads coming back now should be able to give the club a really good go now at getting back up the table.
I definitely get the whole family thing, that makes complete sense. You want to spend more time with them. When you took the job initially, was that a worry then, and you thought, well, we'll just try and get through this and see if it works?
Yeah, and again, previously as a player, my eldest daughter had 4 different primary schools in Scotland where we were moving around, and it's not easy. I remember we got to, I think she was in the last year of primary school in Scotland, and when I left Hibs, the wife had said, look, we're moving home now. We're going to wherever we're going to be now for forever, and you can go off and be on your own. I remember going back to Scotland and playing for 6 months, living in an apartment by myself, and I didn't like it. Whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, but I ruptured my Achilles the last day of that season, and I went home then. And then for the next 10 months, I was obviously every day again. I was back with the family, and then I was back in the League of Ireland then. And I think being at home for them a lot of years, obviously as a player for a few years, and then as a manager at Drogheda, a manager at Pats, I'm in the house every day. I'm back from training before they're back from school a lot of times. And the Cork City opportunity, the size of the club and the opportunity, was one I couldn't turn down. It was probably the best time to get the job, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but they'd just been relegated and they were heavy favourites to win the first division and get back up. And I seen that as a brilliant opportunity for myself to manage such a huge club in this country. And I think back to the Premier Division, I was very excited, but I think putting plans in place, lads getting injured, and there's the pressure then of how you're going to change it, and then losing the assistant manager, and then just the travel, I just probably burnt out a little bit near the end.
Do you think you'll manage again?
Yeah, I think I really enjoy it. It's something that I've had, 240 odd games or whatever it is now as a manager in the League of Ireland. I think I've done relatively well everywhere I've been. And I think that I also have a strong ethos of playing younger players and seeing them develop. And I think that's something that I really enjoy. And especially when you see young lads going on and doing very well, and I think that I still have something to offer as well in that regard.
Are you a better manager now? Obviously, you're going to say yes to that, right? So maybe a better question is how have you evolved as a manager?
I think I've learned to obviously accept defeat a lot more, and you deal with it a lot better. Everyone loses games, and I think all the time it's the more high pressure situations you're in, I think you can develop yourself personally to deal with them pressure situations. And I think speaking to some of the staff that came in, Craig Elverton was very good, very, very structured and organised. And that's what he was saying. He was looking at me close up. He said that how I deal with the pressure of the day-to-day stuff and keeping it away from the players and relieving pressure from them. And I think that's probably something that I've developed a lot more over the last lot of years as well. And the more experience you get and the older you get, you learn to deal with them situations.
And is there any interest in a role that wouldn't be the first team manager? Would you go in as a coach for a period with somebody else, or is that not really part of your plans?
I wouldn't turn my nose up at anything. As a manager, I don't do a great deal of coaching. I dip in, I'll do some of the match day preparation stuff, but the coaches that you have there are to do the coaching on a day-to-day basis. I've played under managers previously to do everything. And they do the warm-ups, they do passing drills, possession drills, tactical stuff, finishing drills, and it's hard to filter through what their important information is from the stuff that's not so important if you hear the same voice all the time. So for the last eight years as a manager, or 8.5 years, I haven't done a lot of coaching. I'm not saying I wouldn't go into it, but if there's other roles in football as well in regards to the running of football clubs and that, it's not something that I'd say no to straight away either. I still think I've a hell of a lot to offer, and there's other sides of that as well, and especially the development of younger players is something that I'm very interested in, and I've been successful at that at every club I've been at.
How's the new business going?
Yeah, it's going great. Yeah, it's a gym that we've opened up. The wife was a personal trainer there for the last since COVID, and then back in February we made a decision to open up a fairly big unit ourselves in Trim, and it's been really good. It's been a brilliant response from everyone, and it's 5 minutes from the house. My daughter Riona is a personal trainer as well, so it's something for her to work out of as well. So it's very much a family business that it started brilliantly, and it's something that we can develop and grow, and maybe that will give me the freedom a little bit more to be able to take jobs in football where there's a little bit more of a risk, knowing that the family's secure behind the job.
Yeah, the insecurity of the job is insane. That, like, you know, people talk about, and people are, oh, managers should be sacked. It's like, well, what? I mean, that's my actual job.
It is. And I think, look, it's sometimes it's hard for fans to disconnect. And I'm very conscious of when I'm a manager of a football club, it's not my club. It's the fans' club. Even the owners of the club or the people who work at the club. Now, a lot of them in the League of Ireland will be diehard fans of that club, so it is their club, but it's I'm very conscious of that this is their club, and while I'm there, I've got to do the best I can. But fans then don't see the disconnect. The working life, it's my job, as opposed to it's their club, and I think when they get a couple of bad results, they do shout for a manager's head, and it's very hard for owners or boards at football clubs when the fans are making a lot of noise to stick with someone, because they're the ones that pay the bills of the fans. They're the ones, the season tickets and everything else. They're the revenue for the club. So the last thing the owners and boards want is the frustration to be directed at them. And listen, the fall guy normally is the manager. But we went with knowing that, and that's a part of the job.
Well, listen, we wish you the very best. Thanks a million for sharing all that with us, Tim. It's really interesting.
No, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having us on.
Best of luck with everything, Tim. Cheers.